Welcome to week number 44. This is the podcast that's based upon our newsletter that we send out to anybody that is really interested. If you're interested in joining the newsletter or alternatively want some friends to join the newsletter, head over to the website rexsalom.co.za and you can just click on subscribe and you can get all the actual data that goes around what we're going to be discussing today. It's myself, Kirby Lakranji, and it's Dawn Riddler, and we're going to be chatting about the week in markets and just political happenings with an emphasis on South Africa, but then also looking at it from a macro perspective. Now, Dawn, here's the week for us. S&P 500 up 5.85% year to date. That's now up 13.5%. NASDAQ up 6.6%. That's a big number. 28% up for the week. Dow Jones up 5% for the week. If we look across onto the DAX for the week, the DAX is up 3.42%, up year to date, now 9%. And if you look at the Euro Stoxx 50, that's up 4.04% for the week, and year to date, that's up 10%. It's interesting because if you now look at the S&P 500, it's above that resistance level that makes the actual trading channel of 4,200. It's trading at 4,358. So we've lifted off that bottom of the trading channel. And this is where a lot of people are now looking at it and saying, okay, listen, we didn't break through the bottom channel. So we haven't yet gone into this next bear market that a lot of people were really concerned about. We're somewhere inside the channel, and can the market hold into that specific channel? I think a lot of this, Dawn, has got to do with where bond yields have gone. If you look at across the board, across the United States, US 2-year yields for the week is down 3.38%. US 10 years are down 5.56%. US 20-year yields are down 5.13% in the week. And then we've seen interesting moves in the currency. We're going to get to the Rand a little bit later because there's been a mammoth move in the Rand, now trading at circa 18.20, 18.30 against the dollar. Only a week ago, this currency was above 19 to the dollar, or very close to 19 to the dollar. If we look at crypto, we're going to talk about crypto a bit later. Bitcoin is up 1.86% for the week. I look at Cardano, which is ADA. That's up 15% for the week. And then we've just seen a general rush back into what seems to be growth assets for the week, Dawn.
I think this kind of movement always reminds me of that age-old adage of not trying to time the market. You have to be in the market to win it. If you try and time the market, you will miss out on that 5% increase that you saw, for example, in the NASDAQ. And that 5% may not come for another 6 months. In fact, it may drop half percentage point every week for the next few weeks. We never know what is going to happen. But if you try and time the market and say, this is where it's going, and take a short term, and particularly take a very short term, you know, over a couple of months, you won't be around to get that uplift that you see. So that is why you and I always look at the long-term trends. And as you were saying, you look at that resistance level, because that resistance level will start to give us an indication of where is the trend. And the other thing that is very interesting, I think, from this last week is this sort of change in the bonds, right?
Yes.
And that is probably goes back to the softer than expected employment numbers, which is not necessarily a good thing about the economy. But remember, the markets do not equal the economy. They might sing the same tune. One, probably the stock market usually lags the other one, but they aren't the same being, and they shouldn't be confused with the same being. They are just a probably much more in your face indicator when you get back to back news that's going on for hours and hours saying, oh, the market's dropped, the market's dropped, the market's dropped. Doesn't usually go on and say the market's up, the market's up, the market's up. The behavioral finance behind it is very interesting in terms of what is happening here. So although everybody's, you know, happy and patting themselves on the back and saying, oh, maybe it's a Springbok effect, you know, the Rand doing so much better, it boils down to the fact that money is going out of bonds back into stocks because of the unemployment numbers, probably.
I mean, Dawn, it's interesting because I'm sitting on earnings calls now. I'm listening to companies talk about their experiences in the last quarter, and then they get the opportunity to tell you what they think is going to happen in the next 12 months. And sometimes they don't guide that far forward, but almost always companies are saying, listen, we are guiding forward for, and this is the favorite saying, single high digits to low double digits in growth, in what we talk sales growth. So companies are saying that for the next 12 months, given what we know today, given where rates are, given the environment that we've got, there is an environment where sales are not going to be as fast as what they were, say, coming out of COVID. They're not going to be super bumper numbers that we're going to see if rates come down, but we're going to be okay. We're going to see revenue growth in the next 12 months. Now, look, they could very well in the next quarter or in the next quarter, they might very well guide lower and say, listen, actually, you know, that's off the cards now. But for now, a lot of companies are just saying, listen, we're not seeing a complete dry up in demand for our product. We continue to see some demand for our product. It certainly is slower than what we had before. And that is exactly what the Fed is trying to achieve with trying to get the unemployment numbers up, trying to get GDP to cool so that the inflation numbers long term can start cooling down. And they want to see evidence of all of this. So actually, I find Friday's payroll numbers that we saw out of the United States, if you head over to the newsletter, you'll see the payroll numbers that have been put in there. And you can actually have a look at where those payroll numbers, those non-farm payroll numbers were back in March 2022. And you look at how they've actually come down. And this is exactly what the Fed wants to see. They want to know that those employment numbers are slowly, slowly trickling lower and that there's the effect that they're looking for, which is the cooling of inflation ultimately. And look, let's face it, a lot of doomsdayers are saying, listen, something's going to break in the world economy. And there's good evidence of that. Absolutely. If something breaks, then markets do revert and they do start falling. And then the Fed has to capitulate and they have to start cutting rates quite aggressively. But for now, there's nothing that's breaking in the world economy. The thing that is broken is the fiscus. It's the government, it's government finances that are broken. That's the thing that's broken. And that's broken in Japan. It's broken in the US. It's broken in Europe. And well, medium term budget this week, it's broken in South Africa as well. No surprise there, right?
Very interesting. And one of the graphs that I came across this week and that I've put in the newsletter actually visually shows you that growing budget deficit in the US. In other words, they are borrowing, they're not living within their means, nor are we as South Africans. Make no mistake.
Absolutely.
Nor are we as South Africans, but the Americans are not living within their means and they're borrowing to keep up the difference. And the visual shows you quite clearly that this is unsustainable. It is unsustainable here. And in the medium term budget, I was extremely disappointed in the fact that this deficit was not really addressed. He made the usual word salad kind of response to it when it is becoming a serious problem and is a problem that requires some serious intervention. But we both know that until the election is over, we are not going to see the serious intervention. The serious intervention is going to require layoffs, and it's not just attrition. It's not, you know, attrition is people just resigning from a job and not getting replaced. It's going to require active retrenchment in the government service, and I just can't see that happening. I mean, they did have the opportunity of saying, listen, the COVID grant is over and, you know, sorry for you. Now become entrenched in the system. It is now vote buying at the end of the day. Yeah. But, you know, and at the end of the day, after the elections, the ANC is probably going to lose a lot of their votes, but which are probably going to be picked up by the FF. And then we're probably going to see a coalition which is actually going to put us in a worse position. Sorry to be negative about it, but really, until such a time as a proper, you know,
centrist Democrats, I suppose.
Yes, centrist Democrats come into place. Yes. But with some serious alternatives to grants, that is where, you know, that is chewing up more and more. Every single taxpayer at the moment pays for 2.5 grantees, and that is growing, and that is alarming.
So, I mean, I think let's just put some numbers together here. So debt to GDP in South Africa is destined to go to 77%. Just to put this into context, America's debt to GDP runs at 121%, and Japan is well over 200% debt to GDP. Only difference is South Africa is an emerging market. It's a developmental state versus the other ones, which are all developed economies. So the the entrenchment of an infrastructure and of very high living standards is different in the Western world than what it is in a developmental state like South Africa. And the reality really is, as you've said, we've overspent, and we've overspent, and we've got very little to show for that. So as a first step, what has been proposed in the medium term budget is they're going to start looking at the reduction of non-wage spending. Now, that is, well, you know, very difficult to prove, number one. Number two, you're now starting to put less money into infrastructure in the hope that you could potentially get traction elsewhere, but actually leaving wage growth completely alone. And this is your point, Dawn, is they're going to have to do something about wage growth at some point. They're going to have to curtail that, or alternatively, they perhaps don't fire people, but they just don't give them raises. And perhaps the whole thing flatlines and we start sitting through a world of pain as far as strike actions are concerned and so on. And government might just say, listen, I can't afford it. There's not much I can do about it. And perhaps the grant system flatlines for a period of time without having any increases to those as well. These are all mechanisms that they can use. But as you said, it requires a political will to do so. And at the moment, we're running this tightrope around trying to find the political will, and that is lacking at this stage. And at the same time, trying to keep the international community interested in buying our debt. That, and really speaking, what I'm talking about is our bonds, is keeping our bond markets liquid and making sure that there's enough issuance and they taking this up. That switch turns off. And quite frankly, it turns off when the rating agencies tell the international clients, listen, I don't think you're going to get your money back if you put money into these bonds. When that tap turns off, then we're in serious trouble in South Africa, because how else are you going to fund this? There's only one other mechanism you've got left. Well, you actually got two. The one is World Bank and IMF. That's the one alternative. And the other alternative is you just start printing money, which is really speaking a Zimbabwean or Venezuela type situation that one sits with there. So I think we're still a ways off before we get to that point. And one has to watch quite carefully what happens now at the budget speech in February next year, what happens beyond that at other budget speech. As you've rightly pointed out, the politics around this is going to become much more important. And look, let's face it, 77% debt to GDP, that's without Transnet getting its bailout. It's without Transnet actually receiving more capital in order to try and fend for the mess that they've created in that system. So South Africa is a precarious place at this stage, Dawn. And I think companies in South Africa are living in a precarious world, as we've done for, let's face it, for the last decade. It might just continue for another decade.
You know, Kobe, I was thinking about, you know, where can the government get money? And we were anticipating that perhaps during the medium-term budget, he would actually announce some increases in tax. Individual taxpayer, and you know, where he glibly states, oh, those receipts are doing quite well, thank you very much, you know, most of us don't have any say in that matter, it's PAYE and there's not a lot you can do about it. But probably the fairest place to actually increase the taxes is actually VAT, and that is because it is a taxation on consumption, which should encourage savings, for example. Now, we already have a large number of items that are VAT-free that would support the poorest of the poor. They wouldn't be labored with those kind of increases, and maybe that needs to be increased slightly. But at the end of the day, the only way that you're going to really broaden the tax base is through VAT, because, you know, it comes in every single corner of the market that you get this, actually, the VAT actually being imposed. And I know it's unpopular. Listen, any tax increase is unpopular.
Sure.
But I think I wouldn't be surprised if we saw over the next few years our VAT possibly going as high as 20%, closer to what it is in the UK, for example.
I saw some numbers this week showing the effect that the brain drain in South Africa has had on tax revenues. And I mean, we're talking about something circa 1.5 billion rand, less taxes that are being collected just because of skilled migration to other countries outside of South Africa. And that has left the government, quite frankly, in a place now, or SARS in a place where they have to make a plan to collect an extra 15 billion next year. And that has to come with an increase in tax rates. There is no other way around, quite frankly.
Kobe, you and I both know that if you continue to, you know, maybe push the marginal tax rate up to 50%, or, you know, listen, there have been times in South Africa, as you may not remember, you, but Dad probably does, where tax rates were damn near 70% at one stage. So, you know, there is precedent for that. I mean, it's not the globe as a whole, 50% is seen as high. But that having been said, you know, it becomes a double-edged sword, because they can try and get one more golden egg out of the taxpayer goose, but then, you know, they will lose more taxpayers. And it's becoming, as you know, as you and I talk to our clients the whole time, is that if you do want to leave the country and you have skills that are translatable elsewhere, particularly as a global citizen, you know, there are places that you can go to, with, even if you've got a green mamba passport and you've been here since 1066. Well, it's not 1066. What's it, 17? But,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Even for people like you with a long ancestry of staying in South Africa,
yes,
there are options.
Exactly. Yes, absolutely. So that's why I keep on saying the thing that you want is options. That's the thing that you want. You know, it's not necessarily the right thing to pack up absolutely everything and just to leave. Anthony, the other partner in Rexalon, has spent the week in Dubai. And look, Dubai is tax-free, as you know, Dawn. But if you look at the cost of living in Dubai, and you look at the cost, because he's visiting family there, if you look at the cost of living in Dubai, and you look at the food cost, just what food will actually cost you, you are paying tax. You're just paying it in a different way. You might not pay it to the government, but you are paying it in a different way. So the grass isn't necessarily always greener on the other side, but you need options, and you need to be able to have options. And I still believe that if you're a skilled worker in South Africa, you might very well be in a situation where you can price yourself in a superior way. Why? Well, because there's less of you around. There's many more of your skill potentially available in Europe and in the Western world than there is in South Africa today.
And Kobe, as I keep on repeating to my clients when I meet with them one-on-one, working for a corporate, working for a salary does not have a future for you in terms of your wealth, particularly if an increase in PAYE comes in place. You have very little wriggle room. You are just going to have to give up more to the taxman. The few credits that you get, for example, the medical aid credit, we're probably going to be seeing some changes to medical aid, and you're not going to be able to even make that credit. The only thing that reasonably skilled South African can do is to work for themselves, start their own company, and not necessarily contract themselves out, because then it's usually PAYE anyway, but to actually work for themselves, build up their own client base, and build up actually something of value. And that can be done in almost any field. You can actually do that. You know, you don't have to be a lawyer or a doctor or a financial advisor or an asset manager to start your own company. You can almost do it as anything. And I just keep encouraging my clients to at least think about it, because you then have control over your expenses, which means you have control over your tax.
Dawn, you write a very interesting piece this week in the newsletter around Japan and the lessons that are in Japan for the rest of the Western world. Now, remember, Japan, just to put it for the listeners out, just put the context around Japan. As I said previously, debt to GDP is running at 200% there. For many years, they've tried to peg their interest rate as close to zero as they possibly can. As a matter of fact, their policy rate at the moment is slightly negative at minus 0.10%. And then they've implemented a thing called yield curve control. Now, yield curve control, quite frankly, is a system whereby the government becomes a buyer and a seller of their own bonds in order to peg the yield of specific bonds in specific places over time. And the one thing that they peg, one of the things that they peg, is the 10-year yield. They've tried to keep the 10-year yield as close to 0% as possible. And if you head over to the newsletter, you'll be able to kind of have a look at the Japanese 10-year bond yield. So you could see that from 2017, how they've pegged this yield at basically 0% and maybe slightly below. What they're busy doing at the moment, and this is the announcement from last week from the Bank of Japan, is that they're starting to relax the limits around how rigidly they apply that 0%. So they first relax it to 0.5%, saying, listen, we'd like to see it at 0%, but if it trades up to 0.5% or -0.5%, that's okay. We're not unhappy with that. Now it's 1%. And soon, next year, there's going to be even more wiggle room as far as the 10-year yield is concerned. And you can see how the Bank of Japan is slipping as far as their yield curve control is concerned, because they own so much of their own bonds already. They own 45% of the total Japanese debt outstanding is owned by the Bank of Japan. And as this slips, it becomes more and more difficult to try and keep control of this. And why is this happening? Well, because mostly U.S. yields are running up at 5%. Why would you want to buy Japanese yields for 10-year bonds at 1% if you can buy the American equivalent at 5%? So there's this net outflow out of Japanese bonds on a continuous basis. And this is just putting, quite frankly, Japan under huge amounts of strain and pressure as they're trying to make sure that this whole thing can just keep on going. Now, why did they do this in the beginning? Well, they did this because they tried to make sure that there's enough liquidity in the system to make sure that the country works with an aging demographic. Remember back in the 1990s, they had that massive housing bubble and they just did never quite recovered from that. All of this is what has made Japan into what Japan is today. These are the lessons for the Western world at the moment. America is going to be in a similar situation. They've got interest rates. If they had to drop interest rates to follow inflation lower and bond yields don't revert lower, they're going to have to be going to the markets themselves and start manipulating their own bond yields. And what does that look like? So these are big fiscal issues and on of large monetary basis. And I think that's the risk in the system. If we talk about something that can break in the world economy, it's that. The good news is that firstly, it's known. So it's not a black swan event. It's not something that comes from left field. And secondly, governments, especially Western economy governments, can put themselves out of trouble. They can do something about this. It doesn't have an immediate impact. It's not like a mortgage-backed crisis, securities crisis that we had in 2008, where literally the credit markets freeze and literally everything starts imploding on the back end of that. So that's the, I think that's the lesson in Japan. It'll be interesting to see how this thing plays itself out for the next year.
Of course, the downside of letting your interest rates increase like that is that what it does to your debt repayments. But if they're, again, if they own 45% of their own debt, you know, there it's Peter paying Paul. But there will still be a proportion of it where they're suddenly having to pay way more interest than they are perhaps comfortable with.
I've written a really interesting piece around Bitcoin and what it means from an asset allocation perspective this week. There's a lot of talk around Bitcoin and altcoins and just cryptocurrencies just generally. Head over to the newsletter, go and read that. Share your thoughts. But this is all the time that we've got for this week's newsletter. Cheers and goodbye from Kirby and Dawn. And thanks for listening.